Welcome to the ECCDC podcast, where we explore the latest insights and strategies in early childhood education. I'm your host, Katie Lynn Parkinson. Today, we're joined by two incredible guests who bring a wealth of knowledge on mindfulness and stress management, essential topics for all of us in this field. First, we'll hear from Elizabeth Skronsky, a certified developmental coach and a certified meditation and mindfulness facilitator with over 20 years of experience. Her work is a reflection of her passion to help and support people in their own development and to be truly happy and fulfilled, and to help organizations bring the compassion needed to support their employees. Elizabeth will share her wisdom on what burnout and stress really are, along with practical strategies to help educators manage these challenges in their everyday routines. She also emphasizes the importance of modeling mindfulness practices with children, creating a ripple effect of calm and awareness. Later, we'll connect with Lisa Clark, the owner of Lala Wellness and Aura House. Through Lala, Lisa has trained early childhood professionals all over Ontario and the United States and has made her way onto the bookshelves in early childhood classrooms through her children's book, I Am a Growing Yogi. She has received training in infant mental health from Sick Kids Hospital and participated in the Harvard Graduate School of Education's Early Childhood Leadership Program. With a rich background rooted in the early childhood professional community, Lisa brings a unique perspective on the importance of owning your role as a role model within the industry. She'll share her journey, insights on mindfulness practices for children and educators, and offer actionable strategies that you can incorporate directly into your program. So welcome, Elizabeth. I am really excited to sit down and talk to you about mindfulness, especially when it comes to educators. And we're entering into a new year for a lot of educators with new children, and with that brings stress. So I think this is a really timely conversation to be having with you.
Well, thank you, Caitlin, for having me and inviting me and having an option to talk about mindfulness and educators and how it can support them.
Can you share a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to begin in this field of work?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Montreal and, French school until CJEP, which is kind of the college equivalent here in Ontario. And then I switched to English college and eventually went to McGill. And very, very early on, I had that sense in me that I wanted to be, that my career, I'm not sure at that point that I used the word career, but certainly I had a sense that I wanted to help people. And I wasn't quite sure what it was. I mean, I was still a teenager. But I thought, I was thinking in the back of my mind, well, maybe a surgeon, that sounds pretty good. And unfortunately for me and for the person, I witnessed a pretty severe, serious motorcycle accident. And then I realized, oh, this is not for me. That line of work of medicine was probably not for me. But what I did realize is that I was very much interested in understanding myself, even at a very, very young age. Just trying to understand my behavior, why I was doing things and acting certain ways. And so obviously what's the next, you can deal with the physical aspect of the person's well-being, and there's of course the emotional aspect of the person's well-being. So I decided to go to McGill University and get a degree in psychology. So that was the my way of trying to help people. So I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Clinical Psychology. And unfortunately, like many 20-something year old, the lure of making money was stronger than continuing my studies. And there was other reasons as well. So I decided to start working. And to this day, it's probably one of my biggest regrets is not to have continued on to the master's or the PhD level in psychology. So I went into corporate world, went up the ranks, and achieved a high level of success. And then I realized that, this is not really what I wanted to do. And I really kind of like totally burnt out. And we can talk about this a little later in the podcast. So I just quit my job and took a lot of time thinking about what I wanted to do. And the theme was always coming back to how can I help people, and so I just decided to start doing some coaching, took a lot of courses in this. And so yeah, that's how I got into coaching and mindfulness. And the working of the mind's really, mindfulness is really about understanding your mind. It's really being there in the present moment. And that's really where I'm heading now and where I've been heading for a while.
Life has a way of putting you back on that path where you're meant to be. And this mindfulness path, like we've had you come in and we've worked with you in a bunch of different capacities. And from my point of view, this is something that you're just so natural and wonderful at.
Oh, thank you.
So something that I'm really interested in is morning rituals. When some of those high-powered individuals are talking about their day and how they get up and get started, there's usually a morning ritual. And for those of you who are listening who have been on a session, know that when I wake up, I don't press snooze. I get up, I get out of bed, my coffee's already brewed, I grab it, I grab my dog, and I go for a walk. I don't check my phone, I leave it at home. I'm grounded, I'm mindful, I'm paying attention to what's around me. And for me, it puts me in a really great state to then continue on thinking about that frame of mind for the rest of my day. I love to hear what other people's morning rituals are. Do you have anything that you do that really starts off your day right?
The intention is always there. I always have the intent to be very mindful when I wake up. And so I think that first of all, having the intent of setting up something, some kind of a routine that allows us to start our day in a joyful way. So my routine is really to set the intention to be mindful the next when I wake up in the morning, be mindful when I go to sleep. And what does that mean? It's really just in the morning, when my alarm goes on, or if I wake up naturally, is just stay there. Don't jump out of bed. Allow your body to wake up naturally. So I will wake up in the summertime. I always or try to always sleep with my windows open. I'm not an air conditioning person. And so the sound of the birds will wake me up, and I'll take a few moments to really listen to them, stretching your body. Your body is probably a little tight from sleeping. It hasn't moved a lot. So stretching your body. And what I do pretty much regularly is, in my case, is setting an intention for how do I want to show up in the day. I will go with them, and I set an intention. Today I want to really practice patience, for instance. It's one of my analysis. I have a tendency to be impatient. And so today I want to practice to do this. And I use the words I want to, today I choose to be blank. Today I choose to be kind. And when you use the word choose, you're planting the seed. So you may not always be kind. You may not always be patient. You may not always be present. But because you've chosen to be this, the reminder will come a lot faster than if you don't have an intention, if you don't say, oh, today I'm going to do blank. Well, no, choose to be. It's so much more forceful. And so that's my own routine. In the summertime, if I want to extend the routine, I love to have my coffee by myself in my backyard and listening to the birds singing, listening to the wind, listening to whatever the sounds, and really being present. And then I will start my day.
I love how you said choose. It's a choice of what is your intention of who are you choosing to be or what are you choosing to focus on and how are you going to show up and carry that throughout the day. And then I can also recognize that everyone's morning is going to look different as well. So some people have other priorities that might shift in and happen in the morning. So what does that look like for you? And I think that kind of leads me into my next question. As an educator, why do you think it's important for educators and caregivers in early learning to prioritize their well-being and self-care?
So I'm going to edit your question a little bit. I know we're focusing on educators, but honestly, really bringing our well-being into focus as a priority in our lives, it really is for everyone. And of course, it is particularly for educators because you're dealing with, little ones, different ages, and they often learn from you. They're learning from educators. They're imitating. So if you show up in class stressed out, not present, impatient. I mean, they will feel that energy. And if you show up stressed in the classroom, you're impacting all of those minds, and then you're impacting their day and their ability to learn. As adults, really, I think we have a responsibility for all of us to care for our well-being, understanding that if we care for ourselves, then we care for other people as well, including children. So we don't live in an independent world. We love to think that I'm me and you're you, and we're not connected because I don't really know you. But in fact, we are. I mean, there's no, we're all interconnected somehow. Understanding what stresses you, and also understanding what brings you joy. So it's bringing in more joyful moments, and it doesn't need to be 3 hours in the bathtub, or it could be just small critical moments during the day that brings you a little dose of well-being, and that little dose of well-being, those doses of well-being keep on adding. So why is it important for educators to be looking after their own well-being? If we think about how am I impacting who I'm interacting with, who am I impact how am I impacting my students, then yes, it's important for us, but it's also important for others.
It's the you can't fill from an empty cup, and you're being stressed out or you being joyful, either one of those spectrums is going to impact others and kind of spread outwards.
Yeah, it's like, the good old example of if you fly, the first thing they'll say is like, put the mask on your face before help anybody else. Well, if you run out of air, you can't help anybody. But if you do fill up your cup, as you say, then of course you'll be much more positively impactful to others.
And I'm curious, what you said too is that you might not be sure, and here's some small, simple ways of here's 5 minutes there or filling your cup here. What are some strategies for adults or educators in order to kind of figure out if they are stressed out, and then what are some strategies that they might be able to incorporate to find some of those areas to focus on, or where to find that joy, or where to find those self-care practices?
So it's recognizing that we feel stressed, and how do we do this? Well, it's paying attention to our, no, first of all, for me, I know I'm stressed when I become impatient. I know I'm stressed when I become, when my poor husband is a recipient of my sarcastic comments, or I snap at him. Any of those things are symptoms, are signs that there's something not currently in balance. Because when you're in balance, when you're not stressed, you're not stabbing at people, you're not impatient. So look at what's going on. So developing a self-awareness, paying attention to the way you show up to other people, but also paying attention to what's going on inside. Again, in all of my workshops for you, I always walk people through a kind of a short body scan. That doesn't need to take a long time. If you take a short version, just stop for 10 seconds and just pay attention where are you feeling. I can tell you right now, because we're chatting, I know lots of people will be listening, I feel a little sense of trepidation in my stomach. Okay, which tells me, oh, okay, you're a little nervous, so calm down, take a breath. It's all good. So paying attention to our body, paying attention to our behavior, are all signs of, there's something going on, and that would most likely be stress. And what can I do about it? And the what can I do about it is often just stop, just take one breath. We breathe automatically. If we don't breathe, we're dead. But if we breathe consciously, mindfully, then we bring even more life into us. We bring even more joy into us, and we calm our whole system down, literally, when we take a breath. That's probably the first step if we find ourselves really stressed out and we notice it. Quite often we are stressed without even knowing it, and we don't have those signs. So it's really critical. I mean, if we have high blood pressure, we don't know it. Grinding our teeth, we may know it or not. So it's really about paying attention to the external aspects of how we show up, and the internal as well.
I think that goes back to what you had said with your starting your morning and just slowing down so that you are aware of those very early on signs of when you're feeling stressed or you're feeling overwhelmed, you're in tune with it. And so you can say, I'm going to take a big breath. And then what's that next step? And so, which leads me to talk about, you had said burnout. What, in your opinion, is burnout? What does it look like? What causes it? And how can we avoid it if it's possible to?
Thanks for that question, because I think that we often get to the point of burnout when it's too late. So for me, burnout is, an accumulation of stress, unchecked stress, we haven't looked after ourselves. And then for me, burnout is there's no light at the end of the tunnel. I can't see my way out. I'm almost kind of panicking. I don't want to be there. And there's no way out. I've lost total control of my life. And for me, the physical aspects, the way it manifested was, I was on this business trip. I had just been promoted. I was doubting myself and putting an incredible amount of pressure on myself. And I really felt that I had lost control. I mean, I just didn't know my way out. And I was on the taxi back to the airport, and I literally just burst into tears. The poor taxi driver was wondering what was going on with me. And you kind of know why without knowing why, because, I mean, first of all, admitting that you're burning out is not easy, because for many people, it's a sign of, oh, I'm weak. I should be able to do blank. Why can I not do that? So there's a self-esteem perspective here as well. And so for me, I just resigned my job. I mean, I just didn't see any other way out. And this is definitely not the way to do it. Because when you resign under stress like this, under burnout like this, you're not thinking properly. You just want to open the first door that's in front of you and just leave. You're not mindful. You are in that fight, flight, or freeze mode, and it's between freeze and flight. So taking a step back, so once we if we start noticing that we are impatient, that as educators we don't have the joy that we used to feel coming to class, that our colleagues are getting on our nerves, that we're snapping at our family members, then it's really time. That's a major big signal to say stop. There's something not going. So step back, look at what's working, and look at what's not working. What is it that you don't enjoy anymore, and can you kind of reframe it? Don't be afraid to ask for help, which is another very difficult, particularly early childhood educators are women, and it's very difficult for us to reach out and say, I need help. We're fixers, we're nurturers, and we're always putting ourselves last. So recognizing all of those signals, taking a step back. I mean, it's okay to say, I need a week off, or I need some working with HR, working with the executive director of the early childhood organization that you're working with. All of those are ways to kind of regain, because it's really critical for me to feel that you've got somewhat of a control back. Then it starts to, everything starts to calm, kind of calm down. And I'll just say very briefly, going on vacation is a great way to potentially decompress and de-stress. But again, it all depends. But where's your mind when you're on vacation? If you worry about, your students, if you worry about what's going on, if you worry about, what will happen when you're back, then you're not really on vacation. So it's we're going to go back to the beginning of the conversation. It's really about mindfulness and really noticing what's going on with you, noticing where your mind is, noticing what brings you joy, and noticing what doesn't, and start setting boundaries. Never make a decision when you are burnt out because you're not in your right frame of mind and you don't want to do something that you might regret. So step back, talk to people, reach out. If there's an HR person or a friend that you trust, then really reach out. Absolutely.
I think that's such a fun way of saying it, of like you just want to see that easy door that's right in front of you and that's just exiting. However, if you open up the next door and you haven't checked in with yourself, how am I feeling? What led to this? You're going to end up right back into that cycle again. So
Exactly.
you really need to stop, pause, find the joy, and ask for help. It's really hard to do, but
It
it's
is.
so important. You kind of talked about that checking in with each other. If a center was, thinking about supporting mindfulness and creating that culture of mindfulness and well-being, what would be some different strategies or tools that they might be able to use either in a staff meeting or in programs in order to support each other with that, with mindfulness and well-being?
Okay, so very quick, kind of simple strategies that that could be fun is as you, first of all, the culture of mindfulness needs to be embraced really from the top, okay, and role modeled as well. So one quick way is just say, hey, how mindful are you today? It's kind of a small reminder, right? Where's your mind right now? Again, in meetings at the startup, walking or starting the meeting with a short mindfulness practice of imagine a basket by the door. You're putting everything that's happened until this moment in that basket, and you're coming in fully present, knowing that you can always take it back when you leave. Each one of you has a little basket in front of and next to you. Dump your stuff. Take it back if you want after the meeting. Throughout the day, just checking, where are you right now? Where am I? That's what I call the sacred three pauses. Take a breath, check how you feel physically. Are you tense? Are we tense anywhere? Is our body comfortable and uncomfortable? Then checking where we are emotionally. Are we fully present? Is there something that we learned that is making us sad or worried, or at the same time very happy that we may be thinking about planning for this really great party or whatever? So checking where are you, emotionally, and then mentally, are we fully present, or are we making our list to do because we have to go do the groceries at 5 o'clock? So stopping and doing those sacred pauses throughout the day individually and when we start a meeting as well. And then lots of schools have started those mindfulness programs for children. There's lots of information out there as to how to start imparting the wisdom of mindfulness for kids, right? So creating games around that. That would be a beautiful way to start teaching children how to stay calm, how to be more mindful, how to understand where they're at right now, how to set their boundaries, and really bring in more joy in their lives.
That was totally my next question too, of we're doing all this as adults. What does this look like with children? And as you're talking, I'm picturing that three step, like creating an image and even walking the children through, okay, how are we feeling emotionally? How are we feeling physically? How are we feeling mentally? And talking them through. I'm also picturing it like in your staff meetings and in your staff boards and really having that visual check for us, but that role modeling that is going to be doing with children. And when you're doing it for yourself in the room, just saying, hey, I'm just going to check in with myself and see how I'm feeling and talking that out loud, which is what you're saying is teaching those children from an early age to be very in tune. So they can check in and say, I'm feeling this way. What can we do to help?
Exactly. Absolutely. So the Dalai Lama has a saying that, and he shares that wisdom and says, if we were to start teaching mindfulness to young kids, starting 5, 6, 7, 8, violence, bullying that happens in schools would be mostly eliminated. And the reason for that is that mindfulness allows us to recognize what's going on and allows that little pause, that's pause between reacting and responding. So, a lot of the reasons why we're stressed is that we're reacting as opposed to stopping, breathe, what happens, and respond. And all of this can happen very, very quickly. So, starting to teach children it's okay to look after themselves, that we're not being selfish. And that's something that we all need as adults and educators. It's okay to look after yourself. You're not being selfish. In fact, you are being very generous because, again, going back to what we said earlier, if you look after yourself, you're really looking after others. So, and the whole, someone who feels good in their body, someone who feels good in their mind will be naturally more patient, will be naturally kinder, will be naturally more empathetic. And those skills we definitely can teach children. We need to embrace them ourselves, though.
I
And it's
love
not
it.
easy. It's a
No.
journey. So this is, no, for sure, one caveat is that this is not a magic pill. It's a journey. It's going back to what we said at the beginning. It's really choosing every day, how do I want to show up? And another component is forgiving ourselves if we miss one time. It's okay, right? It's okay to falter. And the increase in well-being comes in the recognition and the correction. Okay, I did this, that's fine, I forgive myself. And then if I snoozed, now press on the snooze button a couple of times because I wanted to, then that's fine. Just know that next time, keep that in mind. So
We're humans, we're not perfect, and I don't think anyone expects us to be perfect except for ourselves.
exactly.
And recognize that, say, you know what? I didn't feel good about that. I didn't like how I reacted, or I didn't like how I felt. What could I do differently next time? It's an opportunity for reflection, opportunity for growth. And that next time that rolls around, you can try it again because that's life. There's always another chance. So
Absolutely. The best saying is like start again.
love
You know,
it.
we always have an option to start again. We always have an option to reassess where, how, again, how do I feel? Like, do I feel, is my well-being where I want it to be? Situations in our lives will change. So what worked today may not work tomorrow, right? And being open to whatever happens in our lives. It's not easy, no question.
No.
But we need to learn to adapt. We need to learn to be present and pay attention to how we feel.
It all comes back to paying attention to those very first signs. Check in with yourself. And I think that's a great place to kind of wrap us up, unless Elizabeth, is there anything else that you wanted to share with the educators who are listening about mindfulness or where they can find you if they want to learn more about you and your services?
Sure. Well, my last parting comments on this will be just don't wait for that nervous breakdown. So it's kind of a stepping stone. If you do a little bit at a time, don't think to change, that don't try to revamp your whole well-being practice because it's too much. So if you don't like going to the gym, but everybody's told you it's great for, but you don't like it, find something else that's going to work for you. Don't feel guilty if you don't do it, but find what brings you joy. Well-being is more than just, numbers, blood pressure, whatever. It truly is a whole package of the physical aspects, but the emotional, the mental, and constantly the spiritual as well. So look at, don't wait for that breakdown. Start embodying whatever it is that brings you joy. Start bringing more of that, breathing, and start again. So those are my parting comments. Yeah, I have a website. I've got Mindfulness for Wellbeing, where I have a few articles that talks about, for instance, taming the wild horse, which is our mind just takes off, and the wild horse is our thoughts, and we just can't bring them back. It just totally takes over. So there's a few good articles like this, and my email address is there. So if anybody has any questions, they're more than happy to, or welcome, I should say, to reach out to me.
And we'll pop all of that in the show notes too, so people can find you really easily. So the website is mindfulnessforwellbeing.ca. But I just wanted to say thank you so much. That was such a great conversation. And I know people are going to be walking away feeling much better and hopefully more optimistic and have some strategies in their pockets to really think about their mindfulness and their work they do with children.
Thank you. Thanks to you, and thanks to ECCDC as well.
Now we'll hear from Lisa as she discusses embodiment, expression, and nourishment. She'll share some of the practices she uses in her work with children and offers insights on how we can incorporate more joy into our daily routines. So welcome, Lisa. We're so excited to sit down and have this conversation with you today.
Yes, thank you. Me too. Pleasure to be here.
So what do people need to know about you? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? What inspired you to get into the wellness industry?
What brought me here to this interview today? Absolutely. So it is a really long and winding story. I'm going to try my best to give you the Coles Notes version of it. But when I really think about it, both wellness, like both working in wellness and working with children, like they found me. And my mom, being an RECE owner operator of a childcare center, is really what drove me to want to do something different. My entire life was entwined in early childhood in one way or another. So I ended up going to school to be an accountant. And because I loved numbers, I loved how much they made sense. It was very, there are rules and you follow them. And I very quickly learned that auditing was not for me and had to switch my, I guess, my major. So I ended up specializing in marketing. And that led me to working for big corporations that also just didn't fit. I felt like I didn't fit. The long story short of how I got here is I wasn't meant to be an auditor. I couldn't work for a major corporation and just be a number. And all of those experiences coming out of school, coming out of work environments like that, my mental health was at its absolute worst. And so thankfully, I was able to rehabilitate from that experience through a range of both Western and Eastern modalities and all of this was happening while I was within close proximity to my mom. And I mentioned my mom's an RACE. And so I was working alongside her in the office, helping her with the administrative side of things. So my business degree did not go to waste. I ended up just working adjacent to children in the office on the administrative side of things. While I was working there, I was also doing my yoga teacher training. So yoga is one of the modalities that really helped me throughout that time, like get back to my body, get back to myself, learn how to love my body and move in ways that feel good for it versus moving to perform or moving to compete, which is what my upbringing was as a competitive dancer.
Mm.
And so, it opened up a lot and it unlocked a lot. And I knew pretty early that this was a modality, a practice that I wanted to share with others. I wanted to create those safe spaces the way that my teachers had created for me. And all of that experience ended up coming together through my yoga and mindfulness programs for children, Lala Wellness.
If you were going to give some advice to an educator to say, you know, this is how we're going to take care of ourselves and how we can prioritize that self-care, what sort of advice would you give to them?
If you listen to your body when it whispers, then you won't have to hear it scream. And if you don't listen to the whisper, then it has to get louder and it has to get louder and it has to get louder. But the advice, for lack of a better word in this moment, is what are your whispers? Really start to get to know yourself to determine what are your whispers. Is it like a nagging sensation in your neck? Is it a beating of your heart and your chest? Is it a recurring thought that just keeps playing over and over and over again? And instead of being like, okay, I'm going to compartmentalize and push those things aside, it's taking a beat or a breath and ask, okay, what do you need right now? What do you need? And it's so much easier said than done, especially when you're in a classroom where there are, you know, sometimes up to 20, 30 people. The other thing that I am really passionate about is language, like having the language to describe what you're experiencing, or the emotion that is coming up. And that comes with practice too. All of it is a practice of listening and responding. So getting to know your body and the whispers, what are the body's cues? And then naming those cues, having the language to name them. And then being able to share that language with other people. Okay.
What would that look like as an educator who is hearing those whispers on their own, or maybe they're hearing the children's whispers as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I break it down into three different, I guess, like categories of exercises or explorations that could be implemented within the classroom. There's embodiment, there's expression, and then there's nourishment. Embodiment is movement, being in your body. And so those whispers, when they're coming up, and I'll give you an example. I go into schools and childcare centers and I teach yoga classes for the children. And I started this almost a decade ago. And so many things about my body have changed since then. I've had a baby. I am almost 10 years older. And so I can't move the way that I did 10 years ago. And if I am feeling dizzy, or I need water, or I can't bounce today because my legs are just sore from all the bouncing that I did yesterday, I tell the kids what's going on with me. And then I say, you know what? Miss Lisa is dizzy right now, so I'm going to sit and have a sip of water. If you want to sit and have a sip of water, you can. Or if you have lots of energy, do your jumping. Jump, jump, jump. And I give myself what I need in that moment, and I give them the opportunity to choose. Instead of, I have this program and I need to get from A to Z and I have to push through it. It's like, if you're in the middle of a story and this, and your body is saying that you need something, you can press pause on the story.
A, giving yourself that moment, and B, you're role modeling it for the children while giving them that language. So when they're feeling that, they can say, you know what? I need to sit down, and it's okay.
And you can add a layer of, have you ever felt that before? Have you ever felt your heart racing, beating so fast?
Yeah. And you can say, what did you do when that happened?
Yes.
You did that. Oh, let's try that. That sounds like a really great idea. And then it becomes a big interest of, let's name our emotions and what can we do about that?
Co-regulation is being in community together.
I love that. I've never heard anyone say that before.
It just came to me. I realize I haven't fully answered your initial question. I want to go back to that embodiment piece. Yeah. There are some really, what's the word I'm looking for? Common patterns of the way that pain or soreness shows up in an educator's body.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the nature of their role. Bending down to get on the kid's level. Looking down. If they're outside during play and a child comes up to them and, you know, there's a lot of looking down, bending down, which would cause neck strain, back strain, and leg tightness. So if an educator is experiencing any of those sensations, don't believe me till you try it. But if you were at a transition point to say, my legs are really sore, will you stretch with me? And get down on the ground and stretch, they're going to do it with you. They're going to think it's fun.
Yeah.
Let's do it together.
Yeah.
From an embodiment perspective. And then expression. Mm. There is a breath in yoga. It's lion's breath, where you open your eyes wide, you open your mouth wide, you stick out your tongue and you bow. Like you make a sound. And it's not quite a scream. It's not a scream at the top of your lungs, but it's this outward expression of energy. I love doing it with the kids. So it's like, are there tools in your tool belt to have this outward expression of energy that is, what's the word, appropriate within a classroom setting? But who's to say you can't pound your chest and like a gorilla?
Mm.
Or howl at the moon like a wolf? And the way that I imagine this and how I play it out in my classes too, if I've got all the kids talking at once and everything is very, very, very loud, I will just be like, and I'll just make a really ridiculous noise, which catches their attention. We all laugh, which is medicine. And then I can actually communicate what needs to happen in this moment. And then the last piece, that nourishment piece, there is an element that is necessary of making sure everyone has what they need. But then when they do, sit down.
Yes.
And be with the kids. If it's within your program that you eat with the kids, really eat with them. Breathe. If not for an entire lunch, what about just one bite? Just one breath. Sit down for 2 minutes. Really, if I tie it all in a bow, it comes down to wellness is a confidence and trust in self that is unshakable by those around you. That's my definition of it anyways.
It's a good definition.
And for the people who are like, yes, but the practice there is developing more confidence in trusting yourself, knowing what you need, giving it to yourself, asking for what you need from other people. Can I go down that path of joy?
Yeah.
I'm training a new team member here, and the things that I'm training her on right now are administrative, so they're not fun. And she told me, she's like, "Lisa, I really admire your ability to use the word fun in sentences where things are not seemingly fun." And I'm like, well, we have to make it fun. I have to think about what is it about this thing that can be fun. That can come too with thinking about, okay, what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were little? And then think about all of the ways that you embody that thing. Maybe you wanted to be a singer or a dancer. Circle is your time to shine, friends. Like, let's go big. And have joy there. Maybe you wanted to be an architect. Get in the block center. Have a moment of joy. All of it is relevant because what we're teaching our kids is, or not even teaching, what we're giving is experiences and opportunities for them to discover what they love to do. How do we do that if we don't love what we're doing? So a lot of it, and it's coming from the heart. You have to find what brings you joy.
If you're listening, I have a big old smile on my face, and this whole conversation brought me a whole lot of joy. I wanted to throw it back to you, though, Lisa. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners? You had mentioned that you go into childcare centers and you do some yoga. Where can people find you? What else do they need to know in order to say, "Hey, Lisa, we want to hear from you."
I would love to stay in touch and have everybody's paths continue to cross. So I want to thank you, first of all, Katie Lynn and the ECCDC for having me on. And I mean, the educators that I've met within your region through the ECCDC are all, I mean, I know I don't know you, but my heart knows you. It really does. And I just firstly want to commend you for the work you're already doing. The fact that you're listening to this podcast is a testament to how much you care and how much you want to show up for the kids in your care. When it comes to continuing to cross paths with me, I have to honestly say that my digital online presence needs work. I spend more of my time with the kids doing the thing than promoting the thing. And so, that being said, I do have a couple of social channels. On Instagram, it's at Lala Wellness, so Lala Wellness. And I didn't even mention it in the course of our conversation, but I do now. I have a home base of a studio in downtown Brampton. It's called the Aura House. So my email is lisa@theaurahouse.ca. And if there is any question, dream, curiosity about mindfulness or yoga for children in their early years, I'm an Instagram message or email away, and I'd be happy to connect, see where it goes. It brings me so much joy to know that educators are bringing these tools into their classrooms and benefiting from them themselves. And so anything I can do to support, happy to.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I know a lot of educators are going to walk away with this with some really wonderful ideas, and I'm sure you're going to have some people reach out to you because I see a lot of yoga and mindfulness happening in our centers, and you're correct. We have a pretty amazing base here in Niagara of educators. So I hope they found all of our conversation wonderful.
You. I certainly did. Thank you so much, Katie Lynn.
That wraps up today's episode of the ECCDC podcast. We hope you found our conversations with Elizabeth and Lisa both inspiring and practical, offering you valuable strategies to enhance your well-being and your work with children. Remember, mindfulness isn't just a practice. It's a way of being that can positively influence every aspect of your life and the lives of those around you. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to join us next time for more insights and discussions aimed at supporting your journey in early childhood education. If you're interested in learning more to continue on your journey, head over to our website at www.eccdc.org to see a variety of supports from social media, blogs, to library kits and customizable training for you and your team. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're listening on the Spotify app, swipe up and leave us a comment and share how you practice mindfulness with yourself and with the children in your care. Until next time, keep nurturing your well-being and spreading joy.